All right. Welcome back. The Bread and Circus's freak show continues, and the volume is being turned up every day a little bit more. We've got 82 days until the selection, the announcement of what they decided long ago. We'll see what happens. The idea of trying to whitewash the camel and turn her into something that is even remotely competent is amusing on its face. And then she picks, she didn't pick. They picked for her this guy Waltz, Tim Waltz, who is one of the most vile people I've ever run into at this level of politics. And he's totally in favor of normalizing pedophilia. There's all kinds of, he's got a rap sheet of never things that is really something. All right, we have a great opportunity to spend time with our friend Yoichi Shimatsu, who is back with us tonight, who's got a new paper out. Ran it about 2 weeks ago, I guess, something like that. It's about the camel's dark past. Boy, does she have skeletons in her closet. Hello, friend. Welcome back.
Very good. Good to hear your voice again. It's been a long, hot summer for sure. Wow.
Yeah.
It's been a slog amid all the campaign nonsense, you know, and lies and false promises being flung out there at the public, which is very confused. Just, I think everyone just trying to get by until their next McDonald's meal. It's just, it's been a nightmare for Americans.
And,
you know, this
and
is,
imagine all the toxicity in those McDonald's meals that they're eating.
Oh, yeah.
The American public, yeah, our species is descending. It's going down.
Yeah. It's in the late stages of decay going towards self-destruction. We've got to turn this around. There is still some hope. But then again, I may be talking from the bottom floor of the Titanic. know-nothing who
That's
cannot,
funny.
You know, who doesn't really realize what's really happening. Yeah, so. So it's been tough, and it's been hard to watch, as you say, this grim cartoon of the presidential elections and then the Democrat candidates who show the worst of what the Democrat Party is capable of, you know. And I do have that experience with Kamala. She used to be called in San Francisco, Kamala, that's what they used to say. Kamala, you know, like Kamala, you know, Kamala. That's how they called her in San Francisco. So she's changed her name and making it more difficult to pronounce. So she's a quite a slippery character, a chameleon.
Well, she is. I have a video of her. At least I don't know if I still have it, but I've seen it. She calls herself Kamala, not Kamala.
Yeah.
Kamala.
Yeah, I know. She's trying to make herself exotic, you know, because she wants to appeal to the brown people, you know, not just blacks, where her footing is very, very slippery based on the evils she committed against, crimes she committed against black people as a public prosecutor in San Francisco. So that's why she wants to appeal to the larger groups of immigrants from all over the world, India, parts of Africa, the Arab people and all that, anyone who's slightly tan, she's trying to appeal to with this exoticism. And wow, I don't know if it gets over, you know. I mean, these little fraternities, black female fraternities, you know, the top brightest black kids and richest, you know, start chanting at her. You know, this is like brainwashing of black people. But, you know, just as soon as they get out of the brainwashing of slavery, then the brainwashing of the civil rights movement, the brainwashing of the Black Panther movements, here they are being brainwashed by the cartel, the Mexican cartel's savior. She saved all the cartel and major gang bosses in San Francisco while she served as a prosecutor there. Massive dope dealing, and she was their protector. Yeah.
Right. I wish we could get Willie Brown on the program. That would be fun.
Yeah. He's getting older, and, you know, he's got to be careful, too. He lives in a
he didn't want the grief. Yeah, that's right.
No, no, he's living in a huge apartment, big apartment in a high rise way above, so his former clients can't get to him. He dealt with some of the roughest thugs in the universe, you know, and all the worst dope dealing in the world history. So he lives a life of isolation, sort of like a guru up there in the sky.
He
did Kamala, wherever the camel, and also the current mayor of San Francisco, London Breed. What a strange name for a black woman. Who's the first thing that she gives? What is the first thing she gives to homeless people arriving in San Francisco?
I can't remember, but I do know this.
Food stamps?
I can't remember.
Do you think food stamps?
No, it was something else.
No. Syringes filled with heroin.
That's right.
That's not a joke.
Yeah, that's
not a joke. That's what she actually does. Hey, brother, this is what you need, you know? Yeah, maybe she hopes to kill him. Maybe it's a good strategy. I don't know, you know? But it's incredible what still goes on in San Francisco, which is like a wrecked place, you know, the whole downtown area where all the fancy stores are all wiped out, you know?
Look at that was sort of the professional political birthplace of Gavin Newsom, San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that whole, he was a Catholic, very dodgy character. You know, at the height of the gay boom there, most of the gays are dead, you know. I worked with a lot of them because I was in media, you know. And they died in ways, you know, from the AIDS.
HIV took them out? Yeah.
And just, you know, they move in and draw like groups to buy an old Victorian house, you know, that used to belong to like five black families. They move in and take over, party all the time, nonstop, go to male stripper clubs. In fact, it was just San Francisco time was horrendous. You know, there was a group, gangbangs right on the streets, main streets of San Francisco, right near the San Francisco Convention Center, and no one said anything about it. The police never intervened, but meanwhile, Kamala Harris was getting all these grade school and high school kids, black ones, arrested on dope charge, and on the first charge, she'd have thrown them into prison, you know? And then what that meant is that the poor parents, the parents who were living in low-income housing, the black parents could not afford the rent after they pay for the bail bondsman, pay for a lawyer, pay for all the other fees and the brides and all that. They'd be busted. Their kid would go to a prison where he turned into this, you know, the gangbangers with the pants hanging down to make it easier for the older guys.
Yeah.
And then all the black people were being shipped out east of Concord. You know, Concord is to the east near the Central Valley. Mm-hmm. But what really got horrible, the poorest of the black people, because I see them when I drive to L.A. I stop a lot in the Mojave Desert. I used to live right near Edwards Air Base, so those towns are familiar to me, so old times. Mm-hmm. And you always see these black guys, the only people walking on the sidewalk, hot summer day, smoking a huge cigar of weed, stoned out of their mind, and they're stranded there. Thousands, thousands of bikes are stranded in the Mojave Desert, Lancaster, Palmdale.
No, that's crazy.
The town of Mojave, California.
No,
middle of nowhere. Where is the economic opportunity? There isn't any. All the mines are played out. There's
that's the end of the
there.
Line for them. That's the end.
End of the line. That is thanks to Camel Toe Harris, you know. She's the one who destroyed all those black families and forced them, basically eviction into the gulag, you know, the Siberian gulags of California, and as she made her way up the ladder, you know. So
she's been playing the role of Indian for the most part now. She's not putting the black face on very often. It's Indian.
Oh, yeah. She does that when she's with addressing black folk, but she's actually more Indian because she was a child of a black Jamaican father at UC Berkeley, who was at the time studying science, but later got into some other field, law or something like that. And the mother, she was a biological researcher there, and she was from India, you know, from a pretty good Gopalan family. It's like a middle-class merchant family in India. And so they were both over at UC Berkeley in the mid-60s, 1960s. And that's where she was born and raised. And the mother got sort of incensed. She divorced the father after less than 10 years of marriage because they were poor enough. You know, I mean, it's Berkeley Hills are really, really, really expensive to live in. You know? So they lived in the Berkeley Flats, which is a black, basically black community of the servants, gardeners, the cooks and all that who serve that larger university community.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and so it's called the Flats, you know, and that's good music there, but you can get robbed there too. You know, it was a middle class, a lower middle class black community, not a ghetto. And but the mother was incensed at the idea of being there, thought she was of a better class. And so she applied to go to school in Canada, in Montreal, and took the girls there and divorced the father. You know, so Kamala really did not really have much of a black upbringing because the Berkeley Blacks were not representative, you know, of the black community. You know, it was what do you call it? High tone, you know, the servants of the wealthy professors. High tone black, you know, the servants of the wealthy professors.
You know who else doesn't play the black card? Michelle Obama. And that shouldn't do it much at all. She's not.
Yeah, well, I don't know what she doesn't. She doesn't play the queer boy card here. I don't know what the heck Michelle Obama is. She's a weird case altogether. You know, so
yeah.
So
I used to have a picture.
Yeah.
I used to have a picture of her as a freshman at Oregon State as a linebacker.
Yeah.
That was the deal.
Yeah,
That picture's long gone.
Yeah. She was actually a guy, so that's another very unusual case of the kind of creepy people that represent
creepy people
in the American government. You know, I mean, that's actually the worst enemy of the blacks. It's not the white population, Asians or any of that, Muslim or anything like that. It's their own sellouts who are advancing themselves by stepping on top of the millions of poor blacks who are out there making music, you know, mowing lawn, trying to do their best, selling drugs, doing anything to survive, right? So it's an American tragedy, and certainly not all the fault of, you know, they always want to blame the white establishment. It's not all that, you know. It's there were deep, deep problems. I mean, these people were not from developed societies in the beginning. They were from very bad. It's just like the Indians from southern Mexico, right? They were from a different era, in different time, different culture of human history. And you find very few of them in the establishment in Mexico City. They're mostly European-born people there. A lot of them
and,
Jewish.
And let's be honest, you just said it. The dominant majority in Mexican government, I was told this 35 years ago, is European Jew.
Absolutely.
They speak Spanish,
absolutely.
But they run the country.
Yeah.
Now they got
a new president,
a Jewish
president. The current president is Jewish. AMLO, he actually is Jewish, you know.
Oh, I didn't know.
But he is. Yeah, he is. He's definitely Jewish. He's never been in a Catholic church, you know, never. So he was seen as Jewish when he was in University of Mexico, the Autonomous University of Mexico with the student rioters, you know. So, yeah, so we do see. And then Kamala Harris is married to a Jewish film producer right now, you know, who's got two kids. That's why she talks about being a surrogate mother and all that. The husband,
Doug Imhoff, is a film producer.
He's a film producer. I mean, the thing you got to understand about California: where did all these guys get the money for films?
Good question.
Especially in San Francisco, back in like 1960s, 70s, how does anyone? San Francisco was really a depressed town for a long time since World War II, right?
Right.
Now, how did all the wealthy Jewish families of San Francisco get rich and get powerful back then? I was there. I once was invited to the home of this guy who owns a huge public garage. He's the chief accountant for it and owner, actually, right in the downtown area. And I was invited to his home on Goat Hill. Then he lights up some weed, you know, and some joints. Yeah. And then his stone wife jumps on my lap and pushes her big, you know, boobies in my face. I guess it's a Jewish custom. I don't know, you know. And then he goes to a little desk and starts his calculation. And then my friend, who was sort of a distant cousin of his, said, you know, my cousin there, he's the biggest dope dealer in California.
Oh, that's funny.
He supplies the dope dealers, okay? He supplies the dope dealers. That's how the system works in California. Most anyone who lives up there on Knob Hill has somehow to do with a massive drug connection, because massive, you know, tons of drugs went through San Francisco. Remember the old hippie days there, the Summer of Love, all the rock concerts, the Jefferson Airplane, the Grateful Dead, you know? It was beautifully singing.
The Fillmore.
The Fillmore. The Fillmore District. You know, that used to be a black district until the hippies started. When Richard dope dealers started moving there. Yeah. It was a black district along with what's called the Western Addition, which is more of a flat area, the flats of San Francisco. And that was shared with a small Japanese community. And that's what Kamala Harris, as a prosecutor, depopulated that whole area for blacks so that all these white gays can move into San Francisco. You know, they get waiting space in these cheaper houses.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's how they got in. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the Victorians were really in bad shape in the 60s and 70s. So beautiful as they were sort of in ruins, bad plumbing, bad wiring. And so they were occupied, like the three or four black families would occupy one. But when the gay hippies first came in, they gradually got, you know, pushed out. And then finally when the gays come in, and paint them up and, you know, make them all cute with weird colors, all the black families out of Fillmore were pushed out. And then apartments were being built. The city just leveled whole parts of the Western Addition. There were projects there, but around them they cleared all the houses. So everyone was driven out to make these apartment blocks for the new gay enrollees, the new people coming in San Francisco to replace
all
the kids
who died of AIDS. It was a whole new subculture. It was a whole new subculture.
Oh, much more wealthy, of course, because they're free spending, right? They all got jobs or inheritances from their middle class or wealthy parents. And so they would just blow their money at these orgies and these parties and Castro Street chasing what they call, you know, the chicken hawk scene, chasing sub-teenage boys, you know, after midnight. And then all these there were a lot of gay stripper bars, you know, and they have open windows. You know, that's what's incredible. Just as you leave work, you would have to walk by a gay stripper bar where there's naked boys, young men on stage, and some older guy putting his fist right up some dancer's anus, you know? In fact, this was very popular entertainment. In fact, I have a doctor friend at San Francisco General, good buddy of mine, Chinese-American guy, Sam O. He says every week, you know, the worst part of me, you know what the worst part of my job is? Every week, at least I get at least 3 to 6 cases where I have to use forceps to pull things like cucumbers, squashes, carrots. I feel like a gardener out of the rear ends of these gays.
Right. Well, you know who used to tell me stories about that, too?
You didn't get it, buddy. What's that?
You know who used to tell me stories about that, too, off the program? Dr. Lorraine Day. She was the 30 years of San Francisco General in the ER. She wouldn't believe what we pulled out of people.
Yeah, what was going on? What was in there? It says, you know, you can't make this stuff up. Yeah.
No.
So that was the San Francisco of Kamala Harris. You know, you rarely see gays going to jail because they were protected. Never see rich, you know, people going to jail. Never see powerful dope dealers. But you see a lot of blacks because you see, she's from India. She wants to teach these blacks to be, you know, civilized people. So much for the black vote. Any black person who votes for her is not just a suicidal fool. He or she is an idiot. Okay? You see what I'm saying? She's the worst enemy of black people.
Totally
she's
do.
Put there by Dianne Feinstein and the feminist city council because they didn't They didn't have the stomach to do the jobs, you know, to arrest black kids and expel their parents. They didn't have the guts to do it. She was cold, ruthless, merciless. And being brown, you know, this is a high tone thing, you know, that blacks often talk. Well, I think Malcolm X made the same, talking about the high tone versus the deep black, right? That's all the high tone people selling the other blacks down the river, right?
That's true. Most of the high toners are mixed genealogies and genetics from the slavers. The Spanish and Portuguese crewmen would try to impregnate all the women possible, and they get more money, 2-for-1 sale.
Yeah.
And then that's why a lot of African Americans are light skinned. They came from the slave days.
That's right. And it continued. The whole practice continues.
Yes.
And what's bad is among some blacks is voluntary. That's what they want. Yeah. You know? They don't want a dark toned kid. Yeah. You know? They want their kids to be high toned.
I mean, and they got skin bleaching, and Michael Jackson did all that.
And remember, a lot of people have red hair because they bleached their hair. I mean, this is crazy. You know, I mean, this is the truth about the real tragedy of slavery, which is cultural, and a lot of it was self-imposed, you know, was self-perpetrated. And Kamala Harris, who's half like Jamaican black, her father was a very dignified black family. He was not a Rastafarian dope peddler, you know.
No, I saw American pictures Kennedy of him. I read a little about it. You're right.
Yeah.
You're completely correct.
Yeah, and he basically hasn't talked with Kamala Harris because he thought she went in entirely the wrong direction. You know, she's not a dignified person, you know, and her relationship with Willie Brown, you know, the lawyer for the big cartel and drug deals, really put him off, you know. So I'm not sure they're even talking, you know. It's an American tragedy of a different sort, you know. It's American ambition.
That's a good way to term it.
Now,
your paper, your current essay, your article, The Camel's Dark Secret. We're going to take a break and come back, and let's jump into that
and
spend a little more time on this. You must be just sitting back like I am, laughing at what they have done to this drugged-out, derelict woman.
It's
hilarious.
Otherwise, you'll cry yourself to death if you don't laugh.
That's true. Yeah. Hold on a minute. Yeah. We'll be right back with Yoshi after this. Hang on. Okay, and welcome back. Let's get right to it. We're going to... Yoshi is with us tonight. He has lived an extraordinary life by any possible measurement or evaluation. And your time in San Francisco, and I mentioned the Fillmore Auditorium. I'm going to do this 30
great
seconds.
Band, great bands, great music.
The best.
Wonderful.
All right, here you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here you go. Here's a little treat. That's Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce on bass and Ginger Baker on drums. Now, listen to this a little bit more. You can hear the bass. Jack Bruce played the bass like it was a lead guitar. These guys were the best three musicians ever.
What was the name of their group again?
Cream.
Cream, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic.
Here
I saw them in Chicago. Fantastic band,
Unreal. Here we go. Thank you. That's live at the Fillmore. Live.
Oh, I'm glad you recorded that wonderful version. And Crossroads, isn't that where we're at now in America? We're at the crossroads. Either total criminality, or we're going to have to struggle every inch of survival. Yeah, the elections are coming up, and it's a choice. We can go down the tubes or climb, you know, step by step back up. You know, this, you know, Crossroads, perfect song. Yeah, I remember seeing Janis Joplin at the Straight Theater over in the Fillmore with Big Brother and Holding Company. That was amazing, and then Loud. And then Bill Graham had a place down by the ocean called The Family Dog. I saw, what was the name of that Western one? The Messenger, Quicksilver Messenger Service there. Yeah, so it was a height of musical innovation and glory and fun and craziness, you know.
That group, as Yoshi said, Cream, three guys could make that much sound. Mm-hmm. It was huge, and it was awesome. And that's the truth.
It was great. Anyway, Crossroads, appropriate, very appropriate. Yeah. So anyway, now we're in the era
the camel.
Of bleak.
What's the camel's
depression.
Dark secret? Yeah, we are. We've fallen about as far as we can fall.
Well,
the camel's dark secret.
Okay, her mentor was a Japanese American fella. What the hell is his last name? Jeff. I remember him as Jeff. Anyway. The name of his last name comes. Japanese last names are just crazy. Okay,
long. Yeah.
Jeff Adachi. That was it. Jeff Adachi was her tutor at Hastings Law School. She was a horrible student. She's got some certain kinds of intellectual and speech impediments. Okay, so she just couldn't get into the law books, and Jeff had to coach her all the way through as far as to get a legal degree. And too bad he did, because 20 years later he was found dead in his apartment, so-called of a drug overdose. Now this is a kid. We used to, you know, hang out sometimes at the Kanzaki bar in Japantown. He wouldn't touch a drop of alcohol, didn't smoke weed, didn't smoke cigarettes, didn't do anything bad, because he was came from a very poor family. His father was an auto mechanic in where Silicon Valley now is, in rural community. So he grew up poor and humble, and also he had some health things he didn't want to mess up. You know, he was used to fresh air. So the coroners tried to say, oh, he died drug overdose. And then a second inquiry took place when enough people, there was an outcry. Jeff didn't take drugs. And then, there was a trace amount. No. So, you know, they buried him and tried to forget. What Jeff did, I met him at the Asian American Law Office. It's a volunteer group. When the first boat people were coming to the United States and California, and at the time, Congress just had a steady deportation order, kick them out. You know, and then so I worked for a coalition of Christian churches, making the appeal to Congress, the mayors, everybody, that, you know, these people fought on our side of the war.
Cambodians.
We left them. We abandoned them. They were Cambodians, Vietnamese, Laotians. We abandoned them, you know. Left them on their own to be slaughtered.
We have a habit
of
doing that,
don't we? Yeah, don't we? Yeah. You know, fair weather friends, you know. And they had hell getting through here. And girls were raped. They came on boats. So huge storms. Girls were raped. Horror. They were robbed. But they finally got to the Philippines, and some charities slew them over to the States. We can't kick them out. So I had to go to Congress to do lobbying on behalf of this church coalition, and I was stuck with all these people. So I said, I got to go to Asian American Law. I said, come on, guys. I took about half a dozen of them there. And all of the senior lawyers were not there. They were at some conference up north. And there was just a young fella, small young fella there with a big smile and says, how can I help you? And I told him the case. He says, don't worry about it. I'll take care of all the paperwork when everyone gets back. They've got legal representation, and I'm sure we'll win in court. You got a solid case. And I said, thank you. What's your name? He says, Jeff Adachi. I said, glad to meet you. When I get back, we'll have to go to that bar in Chinatown. He says, fine, although I don't drink. You know, I said, yeah, karaoke, you sing? He says, yeah, I sing. So I did that, came back, and he had done this remarkable job. Not that far later, down the line, I had to leave San Francisco. Well, there was a great earthquake there, the Loma Prieta earthquake. And yeah. I did probably the most extensive news coverage because I was the only reporter in all of California, in fact, the West, who had a highway patrol pass to get into crisis sites, places, gotcha. Fires, like that, whatever, building collapses.
The freeway fell, that whole section of freeway
fell. I was the only reporter there. Yeah, I brought in a Japanese TV crew. We interviewed some blacks. All the other reporters were at a great distance, wishing I'd let them in, but I said, I can only fit so many people, And we were talking to the black kids who were accused of looting the people and all that. And they said, are you kidding? We didn't have time to loot anybody, but the roof was coming down. These people were in dire trouble, and we had to pull them out, This was life or death. And so I reported that, It's always like in San Francisco, when a black guy does something bad, it gets headlines. When a black person does something good, no notice, So I gave them notice, and they actually became famous in Japan as heroes of the quake. So then after that, there was Stockton massacre. A bunch of Cambodian Laotian kids were killed by this madman in Stockton. The community was very anti-Southeast Asian until I went there because I could talk good English as opposed to the immigrants and say, these people were on our side, they're having refuge here, They're not your enemy.
Yeah.
And then all the attitudes changed. Suddenly they were harbored by everybody. But 22 grade school kids were mowed down, by this madman. The guy was crazy. And
22?
I brought over
a Vietnamese
intern at my news service and said, Andrew Lam, a very famous poet and writer, I said, these are your people more than my people. You've got to take over from me. I got an offer to do a very high-ranking editorial position in Japan, and this is my chance to make a step up in the world of journalism, which I want to do. So he says, okay. And so I left for Japan. And then much later, my former friends from San Francisco, an older guy, visited our office at the Japan Times, and we were just chatting, and he says, did you know Jeff Adachi? And I said, of course, He says, he was murdered. I said, what? He was a public defendant. He was a good guy. He helped so many kids get out of trouble. He was an angel. Then at that time, my mind flashed. Who could have done it? And immediately what came to mind, Kamala Harris. They had fought. She was a prosecutor. He was a public defender. He was her former tutor.
He tutored her through law school.
The guy who helped her, got her ahead,
unreal.
Kill him. Get him out of my way. I don't want him in my bio, right?
Unreal.
Yeah,
unreal.
And I'm certain she was involved because she was the main squeeze, the girlfriend of Willie Brown, is connected with all the cartel and all the gangs in working in Northern California, the drug business, who never helped these young kids. Okay, they only helped themselves, the big players. The young kids were sacrificed. They're ruthless, ruthless guys. And so, obviously, she did it for her old man there. what can I say? Yeah, he was an old man. He's more than twice his age, her age. So so I'm wondering, that's why I wrote this article. Is America going to elect a cold-blooded killer? Yeah?
Oh, I don't know if it'll be the first time. We got to think back on this. But,
Andrew Jackson killed a lot of people, but he did it for a good reason. Yeah. I mean, it was called warfare.
Yeah,
it was warfare, right, to protect the state.
Hey, look,
she is.
I don't even like to use the term elect. Select is better, but I don't know which one they're going to put in. They're still trying to tell us that Joe Biden got 87 million votes, more than any other candidate in history. Come on.
Yeah, this is
so
nonsense.
They'll do whatever they want. What
right.
They've decided, I don't know. We won't find out until 82 days away, and we'll know more. But she's poison.
For me.
She's awful.
You'll begin for me soon an article on the real background of Tim Walz. See, I get around the world a lot, okay? I've been in China a lot reporting, all over Asia, but especially China when it was becoming the big power. You know, I spent a lot of time there, based myself in Hong Kong, working for a fashion magazine, well, which would pay my bills so I can go into main China. And actually, I helped start a journalism school there, but they kicked me out when they found out I was a real journalist. And, that was also at the urging of... what's the former mayor of New York, the guy, the Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg's people stabbed me in the back. In fact, they tried to get me killed by the terrorists out in Western China. It's really rough. You know, never think journalists die by accidents. It never happens. It's never an accident.
No.
It's always
look
a plan.
Look how many of the Israelis have slaughtered in Gaza. A couple of hundred now or
point.
More.
Yeah, it's not a misfire. It's not a backfire.
No.
Yes, they, you know, right through the crosshairs flyer. You know, that's what happens to journalists
that's
who make
right.
trouble for the assassin.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is the San Francisco story, which went on and continued. And then here we are. This much later, you know, it's nearly a quarter, half century later.
Could they, Yoshi, could they have picked anybody more disgusting than Tim Walz for her so-called running mate? This guy has crap hanging around him.
Okay.
You're going to have a great time writing this article. You saw
the truth is, the Communist Party of China is a main financier of the Democratic Party. They financed Hillary Clinton. We're very disappointed. They put millions and billions of dollars into the Democratic Party. You notice all the Chinese people with all the institutions
CCP.
Related to the Democratic Party. Like NPR, there's a lot of Chinese working in there.
Yeah.
So they stuffed all these places where their people, you know, California, Los Angeles, and San Francisco are basically Chinese towns now and Chinatown now. So they're intent on taking over America. You know, they say American. And, you know, this is the wrong country. They want to take over something. Go after the bad guys who oppress them, the Russians, the British, the French, the Italians. Why go after the only country that ever helps them, America? Right? Go after
That's
the Japanese,
true.
But, you know, right? Because it's easy pickings. It's easy pickings. The Americans are stupid enough to be kind and treat us as equals. That's why we'll go for their throats.
Yes, I know.
You see that?
Yeah,
you
I do.
Understand that kind of thinking of
I get it.
Really.
No, they've got us dialed in. Hey, just like the Jews.
Yeah.
Have us dialed in. They know our weaknesses. They know how to exploit it.
Take down the nice guy. Take down the people with the land, the houses, the pretty wives. Take them down, okay? Don't worry about our enemies. They're tough nuts to crack, yeah? But the Americans are easy. Easy money, okay?
Yeah. How disgusting.
So that is, the problems we face. So, I don't know what the American public will do. I hope the majority, especially liberal elements who are, been under bondage of these no good manipulators, start to wake up and realize that's not where freedom, liberty, education, culture arises. That's where, you become a slave to a foreign master. And this is not good for your children. Your children are just going to be, used like cattle. They'll milk them and they'll slaughter them. I don't know if Americans can wake up to these sort of cultural realities, historical cultural realities, and face up to the fact that the Democratic Party is filled with very antagonistic, anti-American, America haters.
Well, they're communists. CCP, fine, whatever. They're communists.
That's what Tim Walz. Oh, yeah. By the way, Tim Walz, he was a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party led by Bob Avakian. Yeah.
I saw it. He's been to China 30 or 40 times.
Yeah, that's why. He was a member of this very radical left-wing group run by a madman, this Armenian madman. And that's how he got there. He got to Tiananmen Square. And people can't figure out what the hell he was doing there. Was he trying to help the students? No. He was there to watch them get decimated with pleasure. And this is,
he is really creepy, that guy.
He's
really
a creepy fellow. And that's why he got married in Tiananmen Square 5 years after the massacre.
I didn't
blood
know
stains
that.
On the ground. Yeah.
Wow.
Big portrait of Chairman Mao in Forbidden City right in front of him.
Sick.
That's where he got married, celebrated. In other words, if he really cared about those Tiananmen students, nothing like that ever would be possible. You cannot get married on a graveyard, right?
No.
He's a sadistic bastard. I guess he wanted to prove his loyalty to the Chinese Communist Party. Then he joins the National Guard and...
stolen dollar. There we go.
Yeah. And he's... Yeah, and then one of his things, I'm digging up his record. He was at Aviano Air Base 4 years after the bombing of the Chinese embassy by Clinton. And what could he be doing there at Aviano Air Base? Guess who was there? Blackwater, the mercenary group. What were they doing? They were transporting young Yugoslav and Croatian girls, 12 and 13 year old, and some boys, pretty boys, to England. For prostitution purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
This is what he was working on in the National Guard. So the National Guard was manipulated much more easily than the Army on all these kind of operations that crooked presidents like Clinton, Mounted Clinton was a horrible gangster, it's well known. His mother was a gangster, his father was a Rockefeller. They were gangsters. And so he was involved in these sort of bizarre operations of these gangsters. And the biggest one of his, guess which it is, in his home state of Minnesota. Why did Black Lives Matter break out and destroy his city? His own city. Why did he support that?
I can't answer that, but I do have a story today. Several cops have come forward and said that he ordered them to stand down so the city would burn. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Why was a disaster needed there? Because in the previous 2 years during the COVID lockdown, Treasury agents, inspectors, because there was hardly any goods coming from China or Asia.
Right.
Train loads on Canadian Pacific coming from Vancouver were practically empty. So they had a little bit of time to inspect the cargo. And twice they found counterfeit dollar currency, boxes of it, printed in China, from China, okay? And their destination
was... There's a lot of counterfeiting going on, lots.
Oh, yeah, this has been going on huge. Only because of the lockdown did Tim Walz get caught as the conduit, as a conductor for Chinese counterfeit. Where was that counterfeit going to? The southern border, to a resident of Houston named George Floyd. The guy who got knocked out by those four. They were Voyageurs National Park police, those guys. Those are the badges they had. They weren't cops at all. They weren't Minnesota cops. They were Secret Service agents, okay?
And what's his name, still in prison, though? Or he's out? Did they get him out?
I don't know. Well, they say he's in prison. They have to play the game. They play this game. Cat and mouse is played. So Floyd, there is talk that Floyd survived when President Trump called the Chinese embassy in Houston to ask him to explain what the hell is all this decades of currency, counterfeit currency going into the Southwest. What's this all about? And they said, how dare you talk to this? We know nothing about it. Then apparently they pushed George Floyd over and say, hello, Mr. Chan, it's me. Tell them the truth or they're going to do something bad to me. And then 4 days later, the Chinese embassy staff left Houston and flew back to China. Yeah, all that money was going to Houston, sir. All that money.
Well, I look
so from Canadian
to
Pacific, they transship it to the what's the name? BNF, the BNF,
Burlington Northern
line, the Burlington Northern line, which gets it down to Kansas somewhere, and then the trucks can pick it up and the cartel. So where I'm living now in the Southwest, near the border,
there's
not a single person in these towns in this area who hasn't lost money through confiscation of the bank, because one of their 20s, one of their 50s is counterfeit. You know, and the bank doesn't give you any money back. They take your name, and it's happened to me. They take your ID, your name, your bank account, take it to the back office, write it down, report it to the Treasury, and then you get less than the money you were trying to deposit, you know, is deposited. So it's a massive, massive amount of money, which helps the cartel, because the cartel needs all that counterfeit to pay all their couriers and their expenses and all that. So that's what Governor Walz, Tim Walz, it's all about. An accomplice, a major accomplice, a facilitator of currency. And, you know, that's one of the biggest crimes under American law, right?
Yeah.
Transporting, you know, facilitating fake U.S. dollars is an attack on the United States. That's what it's considered. Yeah.
Not anymore, but yes, I agree.
Okay, so now you know a little bit more about this creep. Okay?
I'm going to send you a bunch of material on Walz that I have. So the good backgrounders. All right, I look forward to that.
Yeah,
great to talk to you.
Something else. Okay, very good then. Thanks a lot for calling, and best wishes to all your subscribers. Okay,
all right.
Bye-bye.
Talk soon. All right, and what a great person. Yoichi Shimatsu. Yoshi. And he's one of a kind. We'll be back tomorrow, Thursday. Have a good day. Take good care, and thanks for being here tonight. Talk soon.